Part of the Boundless Audio Podcast Network.
Hello, you beautiful bitches. Are you looking for a women's history podcast that whines about women from history that you haven't heard of, but definitely should have, with just the right amount of fuckery and a little too much alcohol? Well, you have found it. I'm the genie and I have answered your prayers. Welcome to Whining About History, the podcast that does exactly what I just said. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
It's been a week. What's up?
It's been a week.
I have a little chi on my lap. Look at Max. Look at him.
Your little orphan dog.
My little Victorian orphan dog. Oh my God. He's so cute and he's so pathetic. Look at his face. His ears don't work.
He's just like, I'm so sad. I don't understand.
He looks stoned constantly. Who are you?
Whose fault is that? I'm Kelly. I'm sorry. I thought I said that.
First of all, it is not my fault. Literally not my fault.
No, it's Max's own fault.
I mean, Max is a little pothead. You know, he needs to learn how to handle his drugs better.
I mean, accurate.
100%. Well, Kelly, thank you for being so accommodating and recording remotely. It's been a week. I'm tired and I haven't been home with my puppies or my kitty like at all. And I miss them, Kelly. And Max misses me and he's nested on my lap. And this is where he lives now. And then Charlie's curled up in the little dog bed next to my feet.
That's very, very sweet.
It was just National Pet Day. I cannot leave them.
It's fine. I understand. You just don't want to see me. Which, by the way,
if you're not following us on social media, definitely do that because Kelly posted the cutest pictures of all of our animals. And even though there was only one animal that was pictured that was technically not one of ours... My friend's dog. Yeah,
I know. I was like, it was just easier than doing like separate photos of your animals.
No, 100%. Also, she spends so much time here. Like she's a little bit my dog. But I was like, oh my God, we have so many fucking pets. Like seeing them all together. I was like, oh my God, there's like seven fucking animals there.
Right. And I was like, oh, we have so many animals.
But you know what? There's room for so many more.
I know, I joke with Justin. I'm like, I do not want any other dogs. But at the same time, I am kind of want other dogs.
I'm always one sappy, like, animal shelter post away from having another cat, at least. Also, there were a bunch of like, little collie mixes at the local shelter who are all named after the Spice Girls. Scary Spice is the only one left and she was my favorite growing up and I'm like, is
you're like, I kind of
fate?
Want to. Yeah.
Is the universe telling me to get a third dog? It's not. Spice is gonna find a beautiful home. And
I mean,
it will
collies
be
are
me.
Kind of big, aren't they?
They're like little collie mixes. They're like half size, kind of like Shelties. They're so cute. Kelly, they're so fuck Kelly.
I'm looking it up right now.
Kelly, they're so cute. You don't understand. But yeah, so they were found on a farm, and Scary Spice actually had been kicked by a horse and her leg was broken, but she's recovering. Pupper. She's just got a shaved leg now. But she's beautiful. Also, my little 90s heart is so happy.
That they were named after the Spice Girls?
100%. 100%. It's like whenever I watch the Great British Bake Off American Holiday Edition, which is co-hosted by Baby Spice, I'm always like, it's Baby Spice! And she always wears like the platform heels. I'm like, yes!
Oh, she's in a little pink cast.
Isn't she perfect?
She's still Kelly. She's too big.
Kelly, do you need
she's
another
too big
dog?
For me.
Kelly. Hey,
she's
Kelly.
She's four
Kelly.
Months old. And I'm pretty sure she's already bigger than my dogs, Emily. No, I don't need another.
Hey, Kelly.
One.
Hey, Kelly. You want another dog?
I mean, Yes.
Can we co-parent Baby Spice? Can we share custody? We're such a modern evolved family.
We'll rotate every 2 weeks when
we record.
We'll rotate who gets to take care of the dog.
Oh my God. But then she's with us when we're recording. So it's like,
amazing.
This family's not broken. It's just different.
Yeah, exactly. She will be the pod
mommy and mommy
dog.
Love each other. We just can't live together anymore.
She will be the
and we love dog. You just as much. So Kelly, what are you drinking today?
So I actually did go and pull out a bottle of wine. I pulled out a screw top bottle because I was like, I don't feel like fucking around with a cork. And I only had 2 screw tops and one was a red. And I was like, no, I'll save that for when Emily's here.
I love you, my pea queen.
This is called, it's literally just called Care, which I feel like is also appropriate. It has kind of like, you'll have to look it up. But it's like a drawing of like a person. And then it has like, it looks like a landscape in their head. And yeah, it's kind of cool. But it's a Blanco Sobre Lias. I'm assuming this is from Spain.
Care, I thought you were going to say it's from Spanish.
So it says, Care is a Spanish family winery where the human face is interpreted through its wines from a pictorial design and contemporary art perspective. But on the back it says, our Care Blanco Sobre Lias is a Mediterranean white Grenache blend, which displays fresh white blossoms, apricots, and exotic fruits. On the palate, the French Chardonnay influence makes this wine mouth-filling and well-balanced, perfect for a glass and some tapas or just alone. When resting both grape varietals with its lees, the wine gets an awesome body and rich finish. It is a wine with a young but mature face. Sounds like me.
I love that description. I kind of want someone to describe me that way. Like, awesome body, young but mature face.
Awesome
like,
body, rich finish.
Awesome body, rich finish. Mouth filling.
Poor finish.
I also love how it's mouth filling. Like, mm-hmm. Well, isn't that really dependent on how much I'm gulping it
down?
Yeah,
right? Like, does it just automatically, like, every time I take a sip, it's like, your whole mouth is now full. You don't get to decide how much wine you drink.
Do you ever drink out of a water bottle or a glass, and you kind of overshoot how much you tip it back, and it, like, pours all over your face? This is what that does automatically. It rushes into your mouth and down your throat.
That sounds kind of terrifying in a way. Like,
we'll
see how this goes.
This beautiful French Chardonnay inspired wine will bombard your mouth and rush down your throat with a parade of flavors of blossoms and apricots. Choke on the goodness.
That's funny. What are you drinking?
I am drinking, okay, so I actually, I'm drinking a cut water, but I'm drinking a lemon drop martini cut water, which I have not tried before. This is a new flavor that I found, and it's actually really good. It, like, I did the initial sip, and I was like, oh, it's a little watery, but then, like, it builds up, but it's not, like, some cut water. It's like, okay, I'm going to use this as antiseptic to treat my wounds out in the woods. And this, it's like a lot more. I feel very classy drinking Ooh. This can of cut water.
Well, cheers.
Cheers to beautiful liquids that rush down a parade of flavors down your throat. That are mouth filling.
Cheers, my I own flicked bottle. My can. I saw that.
So, Kelly.
I'm first.
You are.
Cool.
Who are you whining about today?
I can't pick happy stories. Well, that's where we're going to start with.
So, spoiler alert.
Not a happy story.
Well, I My story is not happy either. This might be the darkest story I've covered while still being really fun to talk about. Like, not Nazi genocide dark, but it's dark.
Mine is World War II adjacent, but this time it's not the Nazis, it's the Japanese.
God damn it.
So I don't have quite Nazi level, but you know.
God damn it. Okay.
So I'm covering.
Let's buckle up.
Remedios Gomez. That's her name. Remedios Gomez. She's known as the Joan of Arc of the Philippines.
Oh, already loving it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I know we have feelings about women being called like the better known woman of wherever they're from. But also, it puts me, I'm like, okay, I kind of know what to expect.
Yeah, you're like, from my Western-centric view. Generally know what to expect.
From my Western-centric Catholic upbringing.
Yes. So, Remedios was the daughter of Basilio Gomez, who was the vice mayor of Mexico, not the country, but Mexico, the provincial town in Pampanga, Philippines.
Did she grow up wanting more than this provincial life?
No, but she grew up as a beauty queen.
Oh my God. Yeah, so okay, so growing this is up, Beauty she, and the Beast.
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
The Beast is a world war.
Yeah. She grew up, yeah, like very, very much like she would make her own dresses and like she really liked wearing makeup and wearing perfume and would participate in local beauty pageants and do well. And like generally, yeah, very girly girl, very like into all of that stuff in like the best way ever. However, when the Japanese invaded, her life is going to change from a coming of age story to more of like Rambo.
Oh God. Also, this is very like, but then the Fire Nation attacked.
Exactly.
Like it's. Like so many of the stories we cover, it's like everything was super normal and then a global catastrophe happened and then the Fire Nation attacked.
Yeah. So in 1941, World War II, Japan actually invaded the Philippines. For those of you who don't know, but her father organized like a resistance in the area that he led. For which the Japanese would torture and execute him and then publicly display his corpse, refusing to give it back to the family.
Oh, shit.
Because they were also awful. They may like, not be Nazis, but they were still pretty damn bad.
Well, we've talked about war crimes committed, you know, during World War II by the Nazis, by the Japanese, by the Soviets. But like. I think it was, oh my God, who was the Australian nurse? It's like Victoria Bullwinkle?
Victoria Woodhull?
I don't think she was a nurse. She survived that massacre on the island.
Oh yeah, something like that.
She was from the women heroes of like World War II.
Yeah.
We got more into what the Japanese were up to during that time and with these invasions. And it's always like so dark. And it's not just like the murder is the psychological warfare of like, we're going to now display your body. Or we're going to traumatize everyone. And yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Remedios goes through this horrible, like very traumatizing event. And in classic whining about her history fashion, she doesn't crumple. She's like, fuck you. I will get my revenge. I will avenge my father. And yeah, goes off to do just that. I'm going to give a little bit of background because we don't always do that. But one, I didn't know a lot of the background of what was going on in the Philippines during World War II. So yeah.
It's so weird how we do not talk about that in the United States, where we're very Western-centric.
So this, and it ended up being termed the Hoke or Hawk or something. I'm gonna go with Hoke because that's how I heard it pronounced. It ended up being called a rebellion because after World War II, people kept revolting against the Filipino government. But basically what, so it, you may, some people may have heard of that. And it basically, this is where it started, is it started with trying to drive the Japanese out of the Philippines during World War II. And then, yeah, transition to its own like civil war-y type thing after. But basically a lot of this came about because, so the Philippines had prior to this been under Spanish rule, for about 300 years. And then we took over, the Americas took over and occupied, after that. But during like the late 1930s, early 1940s, there was a lot of like promise of impending independence, and there was already a lot of like organizations mobilizing like the common people and working class citizens for different political reasons. So there was a lot of like Marxist communists in the Philippines at the time, and like all of these different, like there were socialist movements and labor movements and peasant movements and all of these different movements, but very much in a way of like, hey, we're gonna get, like we're gonna be able to run ourselves. And then the war started and Japan invaded, and all of these different movements that had started forming were like, yeah, we're gonna like kick Japan out first. Like step one in gaining independence is, you know, not be invaded by other people. So all of these different factions kind of formed this anti-Japanese guerrilla army, which would later shift into the Hoke movement, or Hoke Balahap. Like there's various names for it. Originally the name meant something along the lines of like anti-Japanese liberation army, and then would move into a different name, which was basically like a pro-independence movement. I talk more about that when we get to that point.
Yeah, because having an anti-Japanese rebellion, the name doesn't really work once the Japanese are
exactly
gone.
So yeah,
it's time for a rebrand.
Basically, the guerrilla movement used all these different like movements that were already out there to combine them to form this like guerrilla resistance army to push out the Japanese. So Remedios was like, yeah, cool. Like she got recruited, but like in a way that it was like, she was very easy to recruit due to what was going on in her life at the time and her like wanting to avenge her father and like all of this stuff. And her brother Oscar would also be recruited. I think he was only like a year or two younger than her. She was 22 at this point, and I think he was either 21 or 20. But according to like their family, like actually according to family, not like the joking according to family lore.
Not just according to family lore, according to family actuality,
yeah,
family truth.
Apparently Remedios' mother had actually like asked Oscar, like, hey, like she's a woman, she probably shouldn't go to war. Like I can't stop her. I'm not going to stop her. So like, can you go with her? And I'm sure he also had a chip on his shoulder about the Japanese. So like they both would enlist in this movement.
I do love the idea of like Remedios is doing this. She's like, I'm in. And the mom is like, well, someone needs to look after her. Oscar,
hey,
get in here. I need you to go look after your sister. Mom,
I don't want to go to war.
Go look after your sister. Go look after your sister.
Oh God, I really hope that's what it was.
You are told.
Like, Mom, I don't want to go to war.
He like begrudgingly drags his bag behind him, like, fine.
Yeah, right. Oh God, I hope so. We don't hear a lot about Oscar in this story, so I can't really say one way or the other, but that's now
this is my headcanon.
Yep. I was like, that is now the image in my head.
He was the Sokka of the situation. If we're gonna keep going with Avatar Last Airbender, he's like, fine, I guess we'll go save the world. But I'm going
to
complain the whole time.
Exactly. I'm going to complain about it. So she joins this guerrilla army and they give her the name Li Weiwei, which is Dawn. Like, you know, nom de guerre. It's kind of like just something else to go by because obviously, like, when you're fighting against other people, you don't always want to use your actual name. But yeah, it means Dawn. And according to her, because there was eventually a book written about her life, but apparently her, she said, "I chose to join rather than to die without putting up a resistance."
Wait, she chose to die without putting up a resistance?
She chose to join this resistance group, this guerrilla group, rather than die without putting up a resistance.
Okay, sorry, I missed that first part. I'm like, okay, I feel like we took a wrong turn at Albuquerque here. This story is no longer making sense. I have notes.
She's already dead. No, I'm kidding.
God damn it.
So she would start service with this guerrilla force as a nurse, and within months she would end up commanding an entire squadron. So at this point, they, like, she was known as Commander Li Weiwei. So I will interchange
Commander Li Weiwei.
So Commander Dawn, like Dawn, like as in D A W N, like the Dawn,
like the dish soap.
Exactly. So I will probably interchangeably.
She's gonna clean house.
There you go. I will interchangeably probably use Remedios and Li Weiwei. They are the same individual.
Yeah.
So she was, so dedicated and, like, such a quick learner that she very quickly rose through the ranks to get her own squadron. And at first, her squadron was tasked with provisioning food and supplies. Generally, they would steal it off the Japanese. Like, they would go and raid Japanese camps. But they saw no shortage of combat either. Like, this is guerrilla warfare, and, like, even stealing supplies means you're going to end up in battles. And she became known as, like, a terror on the battlefield. So at one particular battle, the Battle of Kamansi, the guerrilla forces were outnumbered. There were three different, like, squadrons of troops, and one of the other ranking officers was, like, "We're outnumbered, like, we gotta back off." So his troops left, and then the other officer's troops left. But Li Weiwei refused. She, at the time, was commanding just over about 100 men, and she was like, "No, we're not, like, we're not gonna run away. Like, what is the point of us fighting if we're gonna run away?" And so she stayed, and they were able to kind of push back the Japanese, and by the time reinforcements arrived, the Japanese were retreating, and Li Weiwei's forces had basically won the battle all by themselves. And when she got interviewed,
oh my God.
Yeah. So she got interviewed nearly, like, half a century later. So 50 years later. And she said, "My men and I stayed." This is a direct quote. "So my men and I stayed. We did not retreat. By the time reinforcements came, we were very near to overcoming the Japanese and their allies from the Philippine Constabulary. In the end, the enemy retreated and I was commended for fighting, even though the other commanders had already gave up." So, like, she's just like, yeah, that's, like, legitimately what happened.
She's like, let me tell you how it went down. I stayed and fought, and I won. The end.
Well, and also, like, what does that say about her command that her men stayed with her?
Absolutely.
You know, that they weren't like, "Well, everybody else is retreating. I'm fucking out of here. Fuck you." Like, that they were like, "No, we trust you. We're going to stay."
Well, and this is guerrilla warfare. You know, the people that she's leading are civilians, they're not in the army, they're not trained to be, you know, so the idea that they would follow her command, even against such terrifying odds, really says a lot about their faith in her and also her reputation as a commander.
And I will say, like, this particular, like, resistance did train their members, but even then it was, you know, maybe a few weeks worth of training, like, basic training versus like a Japanese, like, well-trained army.
Yes. Like an actual army.
Exactly. Like,
how to shoot your gun. Get out there.
Exactly. So she became famous after this encounter, and, like, her name and, like, her deeds would spread throughout Tarlac and Pampanga, which are, like, the regions of the Philippines. And the name Commander Li Weiwei would, like, became, like, this name where that the Japanese began to fear, because they were like, "Oh God, like, this is the person that, like, you know, this is their closer. This is who comes in to, like, get us to leave."
ABC, always be closing. Coffee is for closers.
There you go. And there are a lot of stories that she would come into towns that were occupied by the Japanese enemy, either carrying a 50 caliber machine gun or a 45 caliber pistol. And she would enter with her men and basically be like, hey, like, we and the other guerrilla troops are here, so you might as well just fucking leave. So it's hard to know if that actually happened. Like, I couldn't find any direct quotes on that, but apparently, like, that's the kind of the story and the, like, legend that goes along with her, is that she just became, like, so feared that she would basically just show up and be like, hey, we're here now, fuck off, you know?
I'm just imagining her, like, with the big gun walking in. She's got the red, like, headband, like Rambo, and she's just like, you might as well fucking leave now, you pussies.
Right? Your image of her is slightly off. It's in two paragraphs, but we'll get there. But
okay,
because I want to first, I put in that, like, she was known as, like, a fierce commander and, like, a fierce combatant, and obviously she was feared by the enemy, because she didn't show mercy to the enemy, but she was very merciful and generous, like, to the people. So when they would come into these towns, like, they wouldn't just, like, destroy everything or, you know, like, start interrogating people or anything like that. Like, she would help the townspeople where she could. And, like, she cared for the men under her. At one point, she had around 200 men in her squadron. And oh, she was known to be very, like, nice and, like, very aware of, like, their welfare and making sure they're healthy and, like, stuff like that, too. Like, so it wasn't, like, yeah, she was merciless on the battlefield to the enemy only, though. Like, yeah, if she was like, oh, like, you're struggling or you're sick, like, she's like, no, fuck that. Like, get off the fucking battlefield. You know, like, she genuinely cared about the other people.
She's in the middle of a war.
Yep.
Defending her country from an invading force. And she cares about the men serving under her more than most businesses care about their employees. Like, that just is absolutely insane to me. Also, seriously, if you're being treated like shit at work, you don't have to put up with that, because Li Weiwei would not treat you like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Go find your own.
If Li Weiwei wouldn't treat you like that in the middle of a fucking war after she's seen her father's corpse put on display,
you deserve
the crappy
better.
Manager at Taco Bell doesn't get to scream at you for dropping some shredded cheese, okay?
Sorry, I don't know why I found that so funny all of a sudden, like, just out of nowhere. I'm like, all right, that was amusing. Anyways, so not only was she merciful to her troops and merciless to the enemy, she always looked fabulous while doing it. So it is said that before each battle, she would don bright red lipstick, do yeah. her hair, manicure her nails, and wear her best yes. dress. So there are, like,
yes.
I tried to, like, look into it, and I'm like, when they say, like, best dress, do they mean, like, best military uniform, or do they legitimately mean a dress? And accounts varied. Like, so I think, like, depending on the situation, she would either legitimately wear a dress, or she would just wear, like, the nicest military, like, but she went in looking like a fucking beauty queen that she was.
I love the idea, like, she's getting ready for battle and she calls in her, like, second in command. She's like, okay, friend, what do you think? Is this, like, a formal military wear kind of thing, or is this a ballroom ball yeah, exactly. gown situation? Like, well, how am I coming in here and kicking ass?
Exactly.
Either way, I'm wearing 6-inch heels, bitches.
Fuck yeah. She's one of those women.
Yeah, she's like, I will do everything in heels and no one can stop me.
Right. And a lot of people might hear this and be like, okay, that seems like a waste of resources or, like, time or whatever, but, or, like, priorities even, like, why would you spend that time? But according to Li Weiwei herself, it kind of served two different purposes. Like, one, it literally gave her comrades, like, a greater confidence, seeing their commander be so fearless and calm that she could be painting her nails before a battle. And two, she said that she wanted to look her best in case she died or was captured. And then three, at one point she said, I am fighting for the right to be myself. And so I'm like, so it was kind of like, I'm going to be myself on the battlefield because that's what I'm fighting for.
Oh my God, dress for the job you want, not the job you have.
Exactly. But oh yeah, like, my God. But it's true. Like, if I was about to go into battle and I was nervous and I looked over and I saw the person leading me into that battle was sitting there like super calmly painting their nails, I would be like, oh, maybe we're okay. Because yeah, honestly, if your commander can be that calm, it would instill in me some sort of confidence.
That's like if a drag queen led me into battle, like that would be the most confident I'd feel in my life. Like, okay. Right?
You'd be like, I'm gonna win.
This goddess, she's padded for the gods. Her hair is as tall as a skyscraper. Her nails are fierce. Like, she's tucked to the heavens. Like, yes, I will follow that bitch anywhere. I will fight for anything.
Right. So, and like, not only was this surprising to people just in general, because like, again, yeah, that kind of like stigma of like, what the fuck is, like, what are her priorities? But also like, this was the first time in the Philippines in the military, even though it's a guerrilla military, this was the first time that women were integrated and an integral part of the military. And like, we in America saw that kind of same thing, that when women were integrated into the military, there was a lot of concern and blah, 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 blah. So like, there was a lot of that too. And it was not an easy transition to have women come into the military. And a lot of like, today's records say that about 10% of these guerrilla troops were women in the Philippines at this time. It still doesn't mean that they were accepted. A lot of military leaders at the time wrote them off as forest wives. So basically just like, oh, you're the person here to take care of me while we're out in the forest doing this guerrilla warfare.
You're my battle mommy.
Exactly. Also, like, the army itself, like, the greater entity of this warfare, like, we're kind of ambivalent about providing for them or making sure that they had what they needed as women. And the mainstream press kind of switched between being like, they're unfit mothers and prostitutes, to being like, yeah, our proud Amazonian warrior women. Like, and they would go kind of back and forth depending on like how they felt or who was writing the article.
What a horrifying example of the Madonna whore complex.
Yeah.
Like, you're at war and you're still like, this is what you're worried about. This is your problem.
Right. You're like, if we don't kick the Japanese out of our country, my kids are dead anyways. Like, this is your, like,
I know we're being invaded by a foreign power, but is it appropriate? Like, are these women being good moms? Like, right. What about the children? Think of the children. Like, shut the fuck up. Right. I'm sorry. We got issues. Big issues.
I like that people are like, oh, they're going into the jungle chasing dick, you know, like, oh, they're just prostitutes. I'm like, excuse me. Like, I'm married. I'd probably follow my husband to war. But like, I'm like, there is no sex on earth that I would follow into war. Without wanting to be there anyways myself. You know, like, there's a difference between, you know, getting it while you're there for a different reason and being there specifically for that reason.
Well, they used to say that about Civil War nurses during the American mm-hmm. Civil War. And that was the 1800s. Like, again, one of the gifts that this podcast has given me, and I don't always like this gift, is just constantly showing us how things have not changed and do not change.
Yeah.
Like, we are fighting the same bullshit, which makes it even more frustrating that we're still talking about it. You know?
Well, like, there was that one woman I covered that got turned away from being a nurse, I think during World War I, because she was too pretty. And they were like, yeah. No, we can't have that. And I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah. Edith Graham Mayo went to train to be a nurse. And the guy was like, I can't do this. You're entirely too hot. And like, she's like,
I remember that. Yeah. But there was another woman I covered like long before that. And it was just like,
Yeah. But it's a theme.
Yeah.
Like, how crazy is that? Like, it is impossible to be a woman. You're too hot. You're not hot enough. You're too conservative. You're not conservative enough. Like, you are never
Yeah, it literally doesn't matter what you do because someone out there is going to criticize you.
Which is all the more reason to do whatever the fuck you want.
Exactly. Like,
just make sure you're pissing off the right people.
There you go. Like the Japanese army during World War II.
Even in modern days, Donald Trump, when he was asked about the high rates of sexual assault in the military against women, he said, well, what do you expect when you put men and women together?
I know someone that
says
like,
the rapist
that like outright was like, I don't think men and women can be friends. And I'm like, I understand that that is a sentiment that a lot of people hold, but I truly feel that that is an outdated sentiment. Because why can't a woman and a man be friends without one? Like what says that it has to like turn into something more than friendship other than like people?
You know, the people who say that are typically men. And what they're really saying is, I can't be friends with a woman if I'm not getting something out of it.
But it's not even that, like, because there are people I know that aren't that way or aren't men. Some of them are. But some of them are just like, they were so told that by their parents that they've never tried it. So therefore, they think it isn't a thing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. they're just like, well, I was told that women and men can't be friends. So therefore, women and men can't be friends. And it's like, okay, like, maybe challenge that stereotype a little.
All sexist notions are bullshit because Remedios Gomez charged into battle during World War II in a fucking ball gown, lipstick, and done nails.
Right. Or if not a ball gown, she was wearing the crispest, fanciest freaking military uniform ever.
Yes. Yeah. She was dressed to the nines going to war. She was dressed better than I do going to work.
Yeah, probably better than I was going to work too, or I am going to work too. Which is 100%. Sad. Sorry, work, but you know, that's life.
Maybe yeah. I should try that. Like I should, if I have a meeting or something, or I have to lead a group, I should just dress really, really like
fierce, peak
great. And then it's just going to intimidate everyone. Like, oh my God, she's so put together. I look like shit in comparison, or I didn't dress up enough for this. Oh my God. And I'll just be like, what's up?
Yeah, exactly. You'll just be fucking rocking it.
Walk into the room like I'm walking the runway.
So if you couldn't tell by now, Li Weiwei took no shit. Like when people in the army would call her out, stuff like that, she would not tolerate it. So according to some of the articles I read, like at one point someone was like hitting on her, like making sexual innuendos. And so she challenged him to a duel. The person that wrote this, like all we could find was, or that all he could find was that the comrade's name was Katapatan. And that's about it. Like this is in like, so her, one of her younger brothers wrote a biography on her in like 2009, which does not exist in America except at the Library of Congress.
I was literally about to pull out.
Period. No, does not exist. There are no like no print copies, no nothing, except there's like one copy in the Library of Congress. And I was
get
like,
that transcribed right now. I will record the audiobook.
Yeah, I want to know. But basically, like, there's no note in the book, like the brother's book, about like. Like the article that I read, like obviously it was also in American, so they didn't have access to it. But like, as far as they know, we're like, I don't know if the duel took place, how it ended, other than what the person's name was, which was Katapatan. And her story headcanon, if they did fight, she kicked his ass.
100%.
But yeah, even like when she was in meetings and stuff, she was very much like all business. She was like, I'm not going to let you get like. We're not getting sidetracked by my gender because it doesn't fucking matter. And she would come in and she would, you know, like make inspiring leader speeches and she would, you know, she would just come in and get shit done. In fact, one of the leaders of like the guerrilla army said, quote, she did not talk of dresses, dancing or perfumes. She talked of the work to be done, our organizational tasks and of the obstacles we needed to overcome. So like, yeah, she may be doing her nails and she may be like doing all of this quote unquote girly stuff. But like when it came down to it, she was all business.
I'm very much imagining her like an Elle Woods figure, like very feminine, very girly. And none of that takes away from her sense of badass. It's like, oh my God, you beat the Japanese army. What? Like it's hard.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, as the Japanese war ends up or winds up, according to her family, again, not according to lore, according directly to her family, Li Weiwei would eventually track down the Japanese officer who killed her father, and would find him and corner him and get her revenge. When asked what she did, she simply said, "What he did to my father, what he did to us." That's it.
Oh my God, that's so dark.
Horrible things, chilling. Probably, but also like, you know,
that's like when Katara hunts down the man who murdered her mother.
Yep.
But she lets him go, and I'm like, no, honey, you should have fucking drowned him.
Exactly. You're like, I don't think I'm that nice.
I love the idea. Like, she didn't. This is going to sound really weird because obviously this is a war. Obviously she killed someone who did unspeakable things to her father and her family, but it feels a lot more tasteful that she was like, I just returned the favor.
Yeah.
She didn't get into the gory details. She didn't like expound. She didn't use that to add to her own legend or her own sense of like, well, I'm a badass because I did this, that, and the other thing. She didn't need to.
Yeah,
because
no, she was very
confident
simply
in herself.
Yep.
But also I feel like she understood like this whole thing. It was not for glory. It was to get the job done and it was to get them the fuck out so they could reclaim their country.
Exactly. Like, yeah, this wasn't, like you said, it wasn't for glory. It was like, we need to get this done. We want to be our own nation. This is how we do it.
She's so classy.
She really is.
She's like, a lady does not start a fight, but I will finish one.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah, she will. So after the war, so we're kind of moving into part two of what became known as the Hoke Rebellion. So the Philippines would gain independence after the war, after the Japanese were kind of expelled from their country. And there was a chance for the Hokes to give up their arms and join the government and exist legally and blah, 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 blah. But immediately after World War II, there came the Cold War. So anything affiliated with communism or the Communist Party or socialists or anything even vaguely resembling like peasants getting an equal share was very much like axed. Like, and from what I read about this conflict, because I didn't read super into it, but I read a little bit, like the Philippines leaned maybe a little bit too hard into that, where they were, you know, like things didn't even get back to like normal after, like they took a lot of land from the Hoke people, which are kind of like the commoners, essentially.
It was like an overcorrection.
Yeah, but like not even in a way that made sense. Like, because it wasn't like, oh, we're going to, you know, like we're going to try to balance everything. It was very much like, okay, we're just going to kind of slightly make everything a little bit worse. Is my judgment, which it is a judgment, but it's kind of a judgment I'm sticking with. I wasn't in the Philippines at the time, but it did not sound like a good time.
Yeah. Well, and it's a testament also to, this was a country that was struggling to find its independence. The Japanese invaded, they get the Japanese out, and they're back to the struggle for their identity and their independence. And what does that look like? And what does that form of government look like? And it's very messy. And surviving, being ravaged by a world war was not going to help any of that.
No. And
because everyone is so traumatized.
Well, unfortunately, we were also heavily involved, which is generally, I've noticed, not a great thing. Like,
I'm gonna sprinkle in a little American influence, and there we have a shit sandwich.
And I mean, yeah, like they were generally like kind of mean to their lower class. So what I read is basically like life for the common people or the hoax, like didn't even, like I said, didn't even return to like pre-war conditions after World War II. The government was seizing land and like all of this stuff. And a bunch of people had moved to Manila, like one of the big cities in the Philippines during the war. And so like the economically things were shit, particularly for the lower class. And then there was apparently a lot of like hostility and repression from the USAF soldiers, which were the United States forces that were occupying the Philippines to assist. But it wasn't just the soldiers either. It was like the Philippine constabulary and the different landlords. There was a lot of sharecropping going on in the Philippines during this time, and like borderline slave labor of their own people. By their own people. It was not great. And they tried to do like a,
this isn't why we pushed the Japanese out.
Exactly. And they tried to do like a really intense, really mean, like forced disarmament of the lower classes of like these Hoke people. Again, technically it was an order from the United States. But I think it was also like a larger Geneva Convention order. But like technically it was from us, which I'm like, oh, I don't feel good about that. So, yeah, like there was a lot of victimization of particularly the lower classes, which was a lot of these Hoke people that were these guerrilla warfare people that had done so much for their country during World War II.
Right. Also, I feel like being an American and learning about American history is very much the, ooh, I don't feel good about that.
Yeah.
Like that is the appropriate response to 99% of America. Ooh, I don't feel good about that.
Well, and the thing that makes me sad, and I'm not saying anything against the Philippines. If we have any Filipino listeners, like I'm not calling out your country at all. But there are apparently, according to some of the articles I read, like some of the history books still very much view the Hoke soldiers as criminals. And they're mm-hmm. still very much portrayed as not in the right. And I'm sure stuff happened that they, you know, weren't great. You know, like I'm sure stuff happened because you think about like when you're poor and you're struggling, you may loot things or stuff like that. Or even like the fact that, yeah, they did end up attacking the government, and that government still technically stands today, I believe, in a form. You know, like it makes sense that they can be like labeled criminals. And like it's one of those like there's two sides to every story and who's writing history and blah, 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 blah.
I know we have, I have a friend, he's half Filipino, and I will let you know if he hates you. I'm just going to say, like, I'll handwrite you a letter. No, I'm kidding. But I'd be curious because,
right. Like, know, hopefully no one family hates me, who might but have like, I would be okay. Feelings. Like, I hope no one hates me. Like, because I'm very open to like being educated or like having a discussion about this because I don't know the history beyond what I've read in what is available to me as an American citizen, you know, like, because there are
an
parts,
English speaker.
Exactly. There are parts of history that I'm not going to get because I don't live in the Philippines or I don't speak Filipino. And I don't, you know, like, I don't know that history because we're not taught it.
Oh, 100% not. Actually, when you said that, the Philippines were occupied by what you said, Spain, I was like, oh my yeah, god, that makes
like
so much sense. 300
years.
That makes so much fuck. Like a lot of stuff just came together for me when you said that. I'm like, funny. Why have I never thought about
yeah.
that? Speaking of which, okay, because this is really heavy, I'm gonna like take a really fun, like a nice side tangent as a palate cleanser. My friend, what's up, Andrew? Who sometimes listens to the podcast, he told me the best story. He was in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And because he is half Filipino, half European, the joke is that he's ethnically ambiguous enough where he's in like
he can kind of
anywhere
fit in
he's
any
working.
Group.
Like
yeah.
He's, yeah, he's like the diversity token, you know, like anytime work is like, oh, we need to do a photo shoot to advertise. Let's put Andrew in there.
Oh my God,
because
yeah.
We don't quite know where he falls. And so he was in Ireland. He was in this pub in Ireland and someone came over and was like, oh my God, there's a Mexican in Ireland.
That's like horrible, but also kind of funny.
It's the funniest fucking thing. Cause he's like, oh yeah, people think I'm this. People think I'm Arab. People think I'm Pakistani. People think I'm Indian. People think I'm Mexican. People think I'm Hispanic. Like,
yeah. Like he's gotten all of it at some point.
Like they guess literally everything except Filipino.
Kind of funny. But yeah. So that's kind of what's going on. And so, yeah, like that, this is kind of when it moves from being like guerrilla warfare to more of like a rebellion, and it's the Hoke Rebellion. And this is like the second okay. phase of it. And this is where they move from being called like the anti-Japanese army to, Hokbang Magpapalya Ngbang Bayan. I'm so sorry. Which means People's Liberation Army. So it's no longer against the Japanese. This time it's directly against the new democratic Filipino government. And she would join the forces. She would join the Hokes again in struggling against this Philippine democracy because she considered it a farce. Like she literally like was like, no, this is a joke. Like what is this? Like you're saying we're a democracy, but you're over here like punishing your own people. Like that's not what democracy is. Like you're only really giving
Sounds
a
like
voice.
A valid point of view.
Exactly. Like she's like, you're not giving a voice to the lower classes. Democracy, you know, like it's not quite communism where everyone's equal, but democracy is supposed to be everyone has a vote.
Right, right. And it's we fought with everyone else to expel the Japanese from our country.
Right.
Now we have a democracy and we're being punished.
Yep.
And it's classism because it's the peasants, it's the common folk.
Yeah, very much so.
It, you know, and they're being punished and exploited by the ruling class. So I get it.
And I mean like a lot of it is because of their ideology, but like some of it was not because of their ideology. And like some of it
right.
Like, and it's one of those things that it's like, what came first? Like them. I mean, it honestly, like, yeah, they were such an enslaved people for a long time. It makes sense that they would turn to communism or socialism or Marxism and all of these things where everyone gets the equal treatment. And then, yeah, they come into democracy, which could have potentially like gave them a little bit more freedom, but then they get treated exactly the same, if not worse. And they're like, okay, no, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, we know communism doesn't work. The philosophy is very appealing, especially when you've been treated like shit
exactly.
like that. You know, you're looking to be on an even playing field. And ultimately, I think that's what everyone wants.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to feel like they've got the same shot as
anyone else.
That's never been true. I can't see it being true in the future. But it really sucks. It's like, okay, we have a democracy and it's going to be great for everyone, except fuck you.
Yeah, except you,
you
specific
hard.
poor people. Fuck all
yeah.
of you.
Which like, I mean,
yeah.
Pot calling the kettle black, right. But yeah.
So sometime in this interim, I couldn't find like an exact date or anything. She would get married to someone else that was like a rebel leader named Bonnie Paraiso. And so he was a chairman of one of like the major political parties. I think it was one of like the Marxist Communist parties, but basically another mm-hmm. rebel leader. And I guess like there's a lot of stories about like how even like during the war, people were like, yeah, like you two would do really well together and da 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 da. But like they dated or they courted for 2 years and then they would eventually get married at some point during the switchover from end of World War II into the new government. And they would go on to have one son together. So during the second phase of this rebellion, she would end up getting captured twice. Both times due to double agent betrayals for like the government. So the first time she would get captured, she was caught on the way to like go be treated for malaria, like so bad that she could like barely walk. She was like so fucking sick, and she was charged with rebellion, sedition, and insurrection. However, yeah, like again, remember she's a beauty queen, so she proved to like just how much she could use that to her benefit, and like became this kind of like media darling. I don't think people necessarily knew exactly who she was at this time. But basically she actually like talked smack directly like to the current president of the Philippines at the time. And actually like, so this is what the research I found. So Manuel Roxas was the president at the time. And he basically was one of the people being like, oh, the hoax are terrorists and they're terrible people and blah, 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 blah. And she said, quote, "No, Mr. President, you are wrong. We are only fighting for a decent livelihood and are only for the democratic treatment in our plight. Who are the hoax, Mr. President? 95% are families of peasants, so I cannot see any reason why the hoax will terrorize their own families and why the parents would be afraid of their own children. We, the hoax, champion the rights of the peasants." Like she basically was like, who the fuck are you calling a terrorist? Like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and she's calling him out because she's like, you're using hoax as this slanderous term.
Yeah.
But really, you're talking about the lower classes. You're talking about the peasants. You're talking about the farmers. You're talking about the people struggling, which is the majority.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, we're not this label that now conjures frustration and fear. We are your people. We are the people you're supposed to be working
exactly.
for.
Exactly. Well, and I like that she
and you've literally just said you fucking hate us.
Right. Well, and I like that she uses the buzzwords like that we are fighting for democratic treatment of our plight. Basically, like we're just fighting for you to pay attention to us and like treat us in a way that is actually democratic.
Yeah. Yeah. You're all about democracy. We want you to treat us democratically.
Yeah. So
she's so fucking smart.
Yeah. So she basically like called them out and ended up being released shortly thereafter. I couldn't find a lot about that captivity. So after that captivity, she obviously would meet back up with her husband and they would move to Visayas in 1948. Oh, I lied. I do have more about that one. I just put it in the wrong section of my notes. Because I thought it went with the other part. So I said she was like a media darling. So when she got captured, it was news because people knew her name. Like they recognized the name from World War II. And in Manila, like I said, the big city, like there was a lot of stories about her. There were stories about like how she was this fearless, daring woman who defeated all these Japanese units. Which is actually true. And basically, yeah, she had this reputation of like, she's so dangerous. She's a huge enemy of the state, you know, all of this stuff. And like I said, she was charged with rebellion, sedition, and insurrection. So they wrote all about that. But basically what confused people like is when they brought her in and they saw her, they were like, who is this woman? Because she was pretty. She was graceful. She's young. Like, she's not, like, this old, grizzled male war veteran. And basically, it just completely, people were so confused because, like, yeah, in their minds, like, all these guerrilla fighters were these, like, tough, grizzled, you know, like, probably ugly men, you know? And, like, this, like I said, pretty graceful young woman walks in and they're like, wait, she's a commander? Like, what? Like, so there was a lot of confusion. And, like, she just kind of blew all of their expectations away. And so she became the subject of such intense curiosity of the people, which is probably why she was able to, like, call out the president that way. But, like, people tried to interview her, and articles covered her capture and confinement. And they started calling her a hoax Amazon. And that became a very common term among like female guerrillas that would fall into government hands during this time. And yeah, the more they dug into her background and like her exploits, the more fascinated they became, because they were like, damn, like she is. She's this brilliant, ruthless commander. But then also she was a town beauty queen. So like they were like, okay, like there was just a lot of like confusion, but also fascination when it came like to her in particular. But like, it did. It changed some of their thoughts around like the women in the guerrilla army in general. But yeah, so she was like,
oh
she
my
became...
God, wait, you're a person?
But I mean, it's not just that. It's that like there was just such
a normal looking person.
There was just such a, like a difference between like, oh my God, you are actually a beauty queen. Like you've won beauty pageants and you're this like ruthless, horrible. Not horrible, ruthless commander. Like, so yeah, it was just like,
yeah,
she was feared, but then she was also like people were really like, wow, you're like, you have a lot of composure, but then also, yeah, like she's really pretty. Like, and it was just all this like interesting, like media sensation. And yeah, it wasn't all just like, oh, look at this horrible person. It was just like, who is this person?
She broke people's brains.
Yeah. Which I think is fantastic.
Were conditioned by sexism. Yeah. I love this.
So after her capture and subsequent release, she would meet back up with her husband, Bonnie, and they would join the forces, the Hoke forces, going to Visayas. And like basically this was like an expansion force trying to like take over a different area, because they were like, okay, whatever, we'll just move on, you know. Like I think it's still in the Philippines, but it's a different like province than where she was before. Later that year, she and Bonnie would be in a raid together. He would be killed and she would be captured. So this is that second capture that I was talking about, and this time it was a lot worse. Her, like I said, her husband died and she was thrown into solitary confinement.
They
were like, we're not even
letting
the media. Exactly. So they threw her into solitary confinement, and it was looking pretty bleak. And so when they came to interview her, and I swear, this is a woman that never graduated high school. Like she doesn't have formal education, but I swear to God, she had to be a genius, because when they came in and they were like, and remember, she has a young son. Her and her husband had a kid. I don't know where the son is during all of this, but she uses that to her advantage, which I love. Like, I'm like,
hopefully
she is
fine.
So fucking smart. No, he is, because when I talk about her later life, she ends up raising him. But yeah, okay. So they go in to like interrogate her and stuff, and she's just like, I don't know. Like, basically, like, not I don't know why I'm here, because she knows why I'm here, but she says, like, I'm just being a wife and supporting my husband, and being a wife is not a crime. Like, that's a quote that, like, being a wife is not a crime. And basically, she
Again,
was just
she's
like,
weaponizing sexism
exactly.
against them.
She's just
like,
I'm just
doing
being
what
a
you
dutiful
want all
wife.
Women to do.
Exactly. She's like, I'm just following my husband. Like, I don't know what you want from me. Like, I'm a mother. I'm, you know, like, I'm just trying to, like, make sure my kid isn't being raised without their dad. Like, I'm making some of this up because I don't know. I assume, like, literally the only quote I have is being a wife is not a crime. But yeah, basically she just, like, super leaned into that sexism and that like perfect family and the I'm a new mom and I'm trying to be a dutiful wife and like all of this stuff. And she like leaned into it. And even though, like, looking back in the history and even back then, like, because the media was able to dig into a lot of like her military exploits, most people can look at it and be like, okay, that's ridiculous. Like, you were doing this for you. Like, first of all, you weren't even married to him until like most of the way through your military career. But at the same time, like, if you think about it, like, what other option did she have? Like, the fact that she was a rebel, she aligned herself with the Communist Party, all of this stuff was enough at that time to have her executed.
Yeah.
And so she was like, no, like, it wasn't me. Like, she just leaned into it, especially like the new mother part, that she was just like, I have a young son. And I just want, like, now that my husband's dead, I just want to go home and take care of my baby. And like, you know, I'm like,
well,
how
we've
fucking
seen that.
Smart
we've seen
is that
strategy
though?
Used in other stories. Usually
still,
it's like,
it's so smart. Like, I'm pretty sure if I got captured in a war, I would just be like, please don't murder me.
Yeah, I'd be like, Well, it's been a ride.
Exactly. I would probably just be
been
like
a thing.
I'd probably just be like, cheers.
Well, this has been a thing. Can you give me some cut water, please?
But I mean, also,
my
like,
last meal is a 4-pack of cut water because I don't want to be moderately conscious.
I mean, also, like, that this ploy today probably wouldn't work as well. But, like, I think of, like, how smart that is. And I kind of wonder if she, like, used some of that knowledge of, like, the shock of, like, the first time she was captured, like, everyone's confusion of, like, oh, my God, you're a beauty queen and you're a fighter. And, I wonder if she kind of just learned from that. And she was like, okay, next time I'm just going to lean into the fact that, like, I am a woman and I'm just going to play that the fuck up. And she did. And it worked.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how it worked or, like, who she talked to, but she did. She ended up getting a release to freedom and getting to go back to her son. And she was fully acquitted. And yeah, so she's a newly single mother, and she did make the choice to not go back to war. Because I think she was like, okay, my kid is all, like, maybe not all alone, but like I'm gonna actually go and be like the mom figure.
Well, she's all her son has left.
Exactly.
Like,
so yeah.
Like, she's lost her husband, and like her kind of getting away with all of this, I don't want to discount, like, her husband was killed.
Murdered. Oh yeah,
for this. And yeah, it sounds like she's like, okay, I'm gonna,
she's
like,
I'm ready to be
my
done.
Focus here.
Exactly.
Like, and no judgment about either choice, but it seems like that's where she was. She's
yeah.
like, I'm literally all my kid has left, and I can't let him grow up alone.
Right. And so, yeah, she did. She, with a son to raise, she laid down her arms. And from what the sources I found, she went to work in, like, a market. And she lived a very, like, relatively quiet life after that. Like, there's not a lot known about her personal life. There's a little bit that we know. Part of it is that she never actually stopped fighting. Her battlefield just changed. So,
right.
Remedios would fight for Filipino resistance fighters to get recognized as World War II veterans and to be able to collect military pensions and, like, all of this stuff. She would lobby and become very, very vocal about the contribution of the Filipino women in the war during that time and, like, trying to get them recognition. And she would personally help these people, both men and women, fill out paperwork for their pensions. And she would do that for almost 20 years. And again, she never graduated high school. So how much of this stuff was, like, self-taught?
I'm just going to say, someone with a master's degree is going to struggle navigating government paperwork, especially when it's government, give me money for my contribution.
Yeah.
So, like, regardless of education, that is quite the feat. But I love that she's like, okay, the fighting is not working. The fighting is not where it's best for me to put my energy anymore.
Yep.
That doesn't mean she gave up. She didn't just, like, back down. She just changed her attack plan.
And from what I was reading about the Hoke Rebellion, again, I didn't go super deep into it because I probably could have. Like, it seemed very interesting, but, like, I was like, this isn't the focus of my story. It seemed like that's kind of what happened to a lot of the resistance fighters, is, like, they were like, okay, I have a family to take care of after this war, or I have, you know, I do have land to take care of, or, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of how the, like, rebellion ended up dying out, is a lot of people just ended up having other things to do or shifting their focus.
And well, so and ultimately, just, like, that's all they wanted was to have normal lives where they weren't being persecuted by their own government or a foreign government, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing.
That's, I don't know. I think that's the part that's so sad, is, like, all of the fighting, all of the politics, at the end of the day, everyone just wants to have, like, a really boring life.
Right. Oh, and
everyone just wants to do their thing and not have to, like, struggle, you know?
Yeah. And Li Weiwei would live a long life. She would die in 2014 at the age of 95.
Shut the fuck up. You shut your goddamn mouth. Are you kidding me?
No, she survived. She kicked ass in the war and then raised her kid and lived a normal life until the age of 95.
Alice Ball died for no fucking reason in her 20s.
Yep.
This gal who went to war, who went into battle wearing prom dresses and got captured by the government twice, lived to be 95.
Some kind. I don't know if that it was actually prom dresses incredible. Or just very nice uniforms. But yeah.
No. They were all ball gowns. They had the crinoline. It was six-inch heels. She had pageant hair. Like,
It was hard to, like, know because, yeah, like, some people would say, like, she went to war in her best dress, or she went to war dressed formally. Like, I'm like, there are so many different interpretations of what all of those things mean.
Hersey headcanon. She's in a ball gown. Yeah, with her
wearing,
like,
formal
latest
dress and
beauty
lipstick.
Pageant tiara.
Yeah. But yeah.
Also, like, that would be so intimidating if I was an invading force and this was the person leading. I'd be like, what is happening? Like, it just does not connect.
Oh, yeah. It would be like, exactly. Like, just like that media was fascinated. If you think you see, well, especially if you think of, like, seeing that in the middle of, like, the Filipino jungle during a war, you'd probably just be like, your brain would just short circuit for a second and then you'd get shot in the face.
100%. It takes so much less for my brain to stop working.
Right?
Oh my God.
Yep. So yeah, that was Remedios Gomez, or Commander Lee Weiwei, the Joan of Arc of the Philippines.
Badass. Oh my God. She's the Commander Beauty Queen.
Yeah.
I love her. Oh, honey.
Yeah, and I know I was looking, and it looks like there is at least one, like, museum piece on her, but I think it's somewhere in the Philippines.
Okay. Yeah, I would love... Okay, seriously, we need to get that book transcribed into English. I will record it for free. This is my charity. I'm going to do my best. It's not going to be great, but I'm going to do my best. And it's going to be better than nothing, which is what we have right now.
Yeah. Oh, and her biography, like I said, her biography that was produced was written by one of her younger brothers. Not Oscar.
Oh, not Oscar. Not Oscar. a different brother. One.
I think his name was like
Mom started to get worried and she's like, honey, go look in on your brother Oscar. He's watching your sister. And he's like, Mom.
Yeah. Hey guys, we know times have been tough lately for all of us.
And during hard times, it can be difficult if you don't have anyone to talk to, or it can be hard to talk about certain topics.
Being alone with your thoughts can be isolating. This is why we are sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen to and help you.
Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Thank goodness.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to the help that may not be available in your area.
You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. That is Amazon fast. Then you schedule secure video and phone sessions. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is completely confidential, just like with an in-person therapist.
You can request a new therapist at any time at no additional charges. If you want to talk to someone about your mental health, you can get a 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/herstory. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/herstory. It does say your local library may be able to interlibrary loan the book from the Library of Congress. I'm gonna look this up.
Okay, while you're looking that up, I'm gonna whine about my woman.
Oh, yeah, and, go for it.
I mean, your story was really intense. Don't get me wrong. Mine might be sadder.
Probably.
So today I am whining about the unknown woman of the Seine.
Like the river?
The look Kelly just gave me. This is what I fucking live for. Yes.
Okay.
We'll get into it. We'll chat.
Oh, geez.
It'll be a thing. So we don't know this woman's birth date. We don't know her history, her birthplace, her family, or anything about her, really. We don't even know her name. Yet we've all seen her face, and her face has inspired countless artists and is called the most kissed face of all time.
But
today I am whining about the unknown woman of the Seine. Let the intrigue settle in. Okay. So we're traveling back to 1880s Paris, France, where a tragic discovery is made. From the River Seine, which snakes through the city, the body of a young woman is recovered. It was not uncommon to find bodies, let alone unidentified bodies, in the Seine, as France's largest river at 483 miles or 777 kilometers for 99% of listeners long, it has historically been used for disposing of bodies, executions by the government, the site of accidental drownings, and suicides, especially during difficult times, such as during the French Revolution, if there's a famine, if there's poverty. It's kind of a spot to go. The Seine would also seek its own victims, flooding the city several times over the years. The woman's body had no signs of injury, so it was determined that she was likely the victim of suicide. Authorities didn't have the benefit of DNA testing. Not that much effort was made into identifying those found in the Seine. And I imagine, like, maybe today it would be a little different because I don't think as many people are like showing up in the water.
Yeah, probably not.
But I have a hard time believing they would like put a ton of effort into it today.
No, it was probably hey, we found a body. If you're missing someone, let us know.
Yeah. To be fair, there was a body found locally, and they were actually able to identify them as a person who had been missing for about a year. So I'm not sure how they did that. If it was from personal effects, I doubt it was DNA or dental because it was really quick. But hey, good for us. We made the effort and we figured out who this person is, right? And we can offer some closure. So this woman was just one of countless unfortunate people pulled from the murky waters. But there was something that set her apart. The woman's face had an oddly peaceful countenance with her lips curled in a slight smile. And if you didn't know better, she may appear to be sleeping.
Yeah, I looked her it body up was because I was like, I need to see you, like, you what have you're to talking see,
no,
about.
You have to see her face because it looks is like she's sleeping. Fucking insane.
Like,
yeah, no,
part of me wonders because they assume suicide because there's no injuries. But I'm like, what if it was someone that just like died peacefully, like in their sleep? Yes, that like, yes, they look young. But, you know, what if they just died peacefully and their family was just like, all right, here's a cheap, free way to dispose of a body.
Funeral on a budget.
But you know what I mean? Like that,
yeah, it's like Frank
that
Reynolds,
expression
like,
makes more sense, you know. It makes more sense to like that she died some other way and then got thrown in the river versus like drown. I would have a
right.
very hard time keeping that expression while drowning.
I don't even look that way when I'm sleeping. No. I have photos of me sleeping. I look fucking pissed.
Yeah, same.
I look so grumpy.
Or like, I look completely neutral. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Not happy or sad, just like
I look like grumpy
bitch
cat.
Face, literally.
Yeah, no. I wish I looked that good. I wish I looked that nice awake.
Right.
Let alone unconscious. And we'll get into a little like some of the theories around her death and okay. Like who she might like, that kind of stuff. Because it doesn't quite add up.
Yeah,
like her expression aside, a lot of stuff just doesn't quite add up.
Okay.
So her body was put on display along other identified bodies at the Paris mortuary in hopes of someone would recognize her. And this was a common practice for a long time, bodies being put on display, like either as like, this is a famous outlaw, everyone come gawk at his corpse, or who the fuck is this? Can someone let us know, please?
Right.
So despite the throngs of people who would frequent the mortuary windows in hopes of finding someone or for morbid entertainment, because it was a popular spot, no one claimed the Lady of the Seine. However, the unknown woman proved to be quite the sensation for onlookers who were enthralled with her blissful expression. Mm. And like, there was one source I found where it was like, there were no windows that were admired more than the Paris mortuary windows, because people would just go by and be like, who's on display today? And I can't say that I wouldn't have been one of those people as someone who looks up incident reports on a regular basis and be like, what's going on? But I mean, these are people who are seeing corpses all the time, and she's a standout. So even the pathologist at the Paris morgue was so taken by her face that he made a death mask using wax plaster. Then the unknown woman was buried, taking her name, story, and even the circumstances surrounding her death with her to the grave. But that was just the beginning of her story. The cast was recreated hundreds and thousands of times, finding its way into art pieces and homes as decoration, further spreading the legend surrounding the young woman. You could literally buy her death mask at a souvenir shop. I did find one Etsy listing that was selling a recreation. It's not available anymore, and I don't know if that's because they sold out or they realized like maybe it wasn't the most tasteful thing in the world.
Why? Like, that's so creep. Like, okay, like if people truly believed it was a death mask, why? That's so creepy.
Well, like, I think
I'm
the weird
all
part, so
for
like,
morbid bullshit, but that's creepy as fuck.
I love the idea of those like Roman busts. You know, you can get like the little mini ones to like put on your desk or something. I love that idea. And I feel like this is an extension of that, except it's a real unidentified dead person.
Yeah.
It's not a sculpture of someone who's long dead. It is the death mask of this girl who no one knows who she is. And you're hanging her dead face on your wall. It's a bridge too far for me, and I'm a spooky fucking bitch. So models and actors crafted their looks after the unknown woman of the Seine. Artists included her death mask in their paintings, and even Man Ray made a series of surrealist pictures of the cast. Like, her face just keeps popping up and spreading. And there was one thing I read that it was like a comment in a book where it was like a whole generation of German actors and models modeled themselves
after this person. Yeah, that's
the unknown Lady of the Seine.
Creepy.
Because she's just so
serene,
really,
like so
beautiful.
Fucking serene,
like, and I hate, unfortunately, that's all we have to comment on, but she really is just like the picture of innocence. So her story has inspired countless artists across the world, but her most recognizable impact is a little less artistic. So in the 1950s, physician Peter Safar was working to develop cardiopulmonary resuscitation, better known as CPR. But CPR is useless if no one knows how to apply the technique. Kelly, did you ever get CPR certified?
Oh yeah, multiple times. I think I'm still currently CPR certified.
Well, we're going to make that real weird for you and all of us.
I don't think it's her face. Not the one I actually no. The one I used didn't have a face because you don't have to do breaths anymore.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I actually read this thing. It was
so,
like,
bitch.
CPR today.
Yeah.
It was like, aren't you glad that it's just chest compressions now?
I
anyway,
am.
Skipping ahead. So using real people to practice CPR was inefficient, unhygienic, and we're being honest, like fucking awkward. There's a joke in Golden Girls where Blanche volunteers to be the CPR dummy.
I vaguely remember when I was in high school, the first time I learned CPR, it was on each other. Like, we never did the full thing because you can't. Like, you'll break ribs if you actually do CPR properly. But, like, for hand placement and stuff, yeah, like, they had us do it on each other, which I'm like, that's super awkward.
Ew, high schoolers are already so uncomfortable with each other.
Yeah.
What? This isn't some teen drama on ABC Family. What the fuck? So the physician approached a toy maker named Asmund Lairdal. I don't know. He's like Swedish or something. Asmund. To design a doll that could be used and reused in teaching CPR. Asmund decided to make the face of the doll feminine, as he thought, and again, here comes the sexism and homophobia, that male students would be reluctant to put their lips on a masculine face. While visiting relatives, he saw a cast of the Unknown Lady of the Seine hanging in their home. Because this was a thing, even in the 1950s, almost 100 years after she had been recovered from the river, and he knew he had found his face. Thus, Resusci Anne, or Rescue Annie, was born. The physician presented her at the first International Symposium on Resuscitation in 1960, and while CPR dummies had advanced since the 1960s, the Unknown Woman of the Seine's face has continued to be used. I don't think it's very commonly used nowadays. I remember all the CPR dummies I practice on being deeply masculine.
Well, there is and a girl and a boy. Like, having worked at a hospital, like I can remember our stock room, and there is a male dummy, a female dummy, and a child. And I think Annie is the child.
You have to do the baby.
No, there's like a little kid, which I think that's who she's based off of.
Yeah, there's a little kid
of.
And then there's a baby.
If you said it was Annie, then the child is based off of her. Because, the adult, I think, is like a male face.
Well, and I think understanding of the story and where that face originated from has spread. And so there have been a lot of pulling, like, stepping away from that when it comes to creating CPR dummies. But for a very long time, they kept using the Unknown Lady of the Seine's face for all of these dolls, for all of these CPR dummies.
So creepy.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, training on one of those and being like, oh my God, that was an actual death mask of a human being who really lived? What the fuck? So... there's a lot of speculation regarding the Unknown Woman of the Seine, who she was, how she died, and how much of her story is legend. So let's unpack some of that, because, like, Kelly, I know you have questions. I had questions. Our listeners probably have questions. So it's likely that the woman was actually around 16 years old, based on the firmness of her skin, and the idea that she drowned is questionable. So, like, calling her the Unknown Woman of the Seine is a little misleading, because she's probably like a teenager, which is so fucking, like, it's already sad, and that's even sadder. So the process of drowning, voluntary or otherwise, does not leave behind a pretty corpse. So depending on how long the body has been in the water, it will bloat, skin will slough off, and critters in the water may begin feeding on it. And I don't know what kind of critters are in the River Seine. I did not get into it because it's not about them. It's not about river crabs. But it's like the whole idea of, like, Ophelia peacefully floating down the river unscathed is not real. It's a romantic interpretation of drowning. It's not real. So the idea that a drowning victim may have been recovered with an unbloated face, let alone a serene one, is unlikely.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't know where the unknown woman of the scent is buried, so there's no way to examine her body for clues or to even conduct familial DNA testing to find potential relatives and figure out who she might have been. And again, this legend that she was pulled from the scent, unless it was like fucking immediately, may not even be true. So the unknown woman of the Sen is simultaneously iconic and frustratingly anonymous. And even with all the advances that we have in science, if we don't have her body, we're probably never going to know for sure.
Yeah. Oh, so creepy though.
But that is the story of the unknown woman of the Sen, the most kissed face of all time.
I mean, it has to be like tied. But I guess if that was like the first CPR dummy. Yeah.
Well, and I don't know. I couldn't find like when they stopped using Rescue Annie specifically. I did find, though, this was interesting. You know, Michael Jackson's song where he goes, Annie, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay, Annie?
Yeah.
Someone's going to sue me now. I'm probably
looking at the Wikipedia article that you read.
Yeah. So. It was a common practice during trainings to, you know, while you're doing your chest compressions, to repeat, like, are you okay, Annie? Are you okay, Annie? Annie, are you okay? Oh, and that's what that was a reference to, which I always wondered. I'm like, who the fuck is Annie?
Same. Yeah.
But yeah, no, Rescue Annie
they started using it in 1960. I assume.
Well, and I think it depends on who's making it. Yeah, I think it's depending on who manufactures the training tool. But yeah, Rescue Annie was this international fixture of first aid training, especially CPR training when that was first getting off the ground. Everyone knew that face. Everyone trained on her face.
Yeah, like the guy, and I always remember training with a male face.
Same. Because again, I think people started being like, oh wait, shit, this is the weird face we've been using as a death mask of a teenage girl from 100 years ago. Maybe we make different choices. Maybe. So Kelly, my darling,
no,
my pee queen,
I don't want to talk about it.
What are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for? I'm trying to like think about this week.
I have something if you want me to go
first. Sure, you can go first.
Okay, I actually have something. So I'm very thankful I got to see the eclipse. So it was my fella, his brother and I, we drove down to Southern Illinois. That was in the path of totality, and we got to watch it in a fucking cemetery, which made my spooky little heart like so happy. Also, I was desperately trying to edit the episode where I covered Elizabeth Thorne, the grave digger, while in that cemetery before my laptop battery died. And I was like, Kelly, I've been defeated. My laptop battery is trash. The night before, I was drunk on Manhattans in a hotel room. Thankful I was with two dudes because I might have gotten murdered in that place otherwise. Trying to edit the episode, I couldn't get anything to download. I couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work. My hotspot was being slow, like nothing was working. And I was simultaneously just like bent in half, laying on the bed and then looking at my laptop and being like, God fucking damn it. And I was just trying to get the audio files like... into Audacity. But it was totality was so cool at like the way the birds reacted. Like when it started getting dark, they were singing their evening songs. When it started getting light, they sang their morning songs. All the other people who were there, it felt like this very communal event. And it was just like, it was a beautiful day. Blue skies, sunshine, no clouds. And then seeing the eclipse in its totality, it felt like seeing a celebrity in real life where it's like, oh no, this is what I see on TV or online in pictures, but I'm seeing it in real life. And it was really cool. And it was a good road trip. It was awesome. I had a lot of fun. And now I get to say I did that.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. Like I had thought about doing it, but it just didn't line up with my schedule this year. But that's, I think it's so cool that you did. Like, not only could you do it, but you got to.
Well, and like whenever I travel, I just think about like how a few years ago, like, and this has nothing to do with the pandemic, that I could not have done that. That literally would never have happened. So that's also a good feeling.
Yeah.
So Kelly, what are you thankful for, my darling?
I'm thankful for working at a place that is incredibly flexible. Cause I had a week, a very weird week of like various people canceling and stuff like that. And, I was able to just take today off because like, I'm trying to like be mindful of my hours, but like no one cared, no one complained. There was no like, oh, you're not going to be in office. Like, nah, nah, nah. And like, I didn't have to take like PTO. Like I can take PTO, but I don't have to, you know, like just that flexibility to be able to, if I want, schedule only 4 days a week and have a day off if I choose. Like, it's just nice. I'm just appreciating the amount of flexibility at the job that I currently have. So I think that's what
I'm
grateful
for. And I really
love
that look for you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. Like us on Facebook at Whining About Herstory, Instagram at WAHPad.
Our website is whiningaboutherstory.com, where you can send us an email. You can find a link to all of our social medias. You can find a link to listen to our podcast anywhere you want. You already know where to find us, but you can send it to somebody else. You can find a link to all of our merch, to our Buy Me a Coffee, where you can buy us a bottle of wine for $5, and we'll buy a bottle of wine to do with your name or you as a person or whatever you tell us to buy. You can also support us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month to get some bonus content.
Fucking do it! We released last month's Herstory Happening, which was a lot of fun. It was a lot of leg crossing and wincing, but it was a lot. I'm really proud of that episode, and I'm really excited to do Kelly's this month because I have no idea what it is, but I know it's going to be fucking fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
As always.
Aw.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
Have an empowered day, y'all.
Bye. Bye.